This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. It's interesting that the question of a candidate's religion doesn't come up all that much in Utah politics. I mean, you'd think it would. This is a state, of course, dominated by one religious denomination. And it probably doesn't come up because it feels unseemly to make a person's religion a factor in your vote. But maybe it does come up in private conversations, but hardly ever publicly. Well, this time in the Salt Lake mayor's race, the issue has gone public. Back in August, former Salt Lake Mayor Rocky Anderson sent out a Facebook post where he said, "People should take into account the Mormon faith of state lawmaker and candidate Luz Escamilla." Anderson wrote that Escamilla seemed willing to do the church's bidding. And he has since said it is proper to raise this issue because the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints plays such a dominant role in the state and has gotten involved in political issues and made itself a player. Whether or not it's proper to consider religion when casting a vote, clearly Anderson touched a nerve. There are two candidates running for mayor, Erin Mendenhall and Luz Escamilla, two women, both Democrats. They have different policies and ideas for the city, for sure, but they're both political progressives. And yet, only one of them is a Mormon. And this made us wonder, would someone not vote for Luz Escamilla just because of her religion? So we put out an informal survey on social media, Twitter and Facebook, and we asked the question. It wasn't at all scientific, we should say, but the responses were interesting. More than 100 took the survey, and most, about 70%, said no. A candidate's religion would not sway their vote. But the rest said it would. And this is probably the private part of this story. At dinner parties and offhand conversations around this valley, there are people who are saying some version of this comment from the survey. "If there were two great choices, one LDS and one not, I would be more likely to choose the one that wasn't." Or there's this comment, "I don't trust LDS people to be fair and impartial when it comes to their church." Or there's this comment, "It's not the LDS piece that worries me by itself. It's the fact that it's almost always coupled with policy positions that are anti-equality or anti-science." And I have to say, people were really thoughtful about this, and hardly any of them were making a decision that seemed to us like religious bigotry. One person said it wasn't a core decision, but all things being equal, this is how the person put it, "This identity marker is a mental tiebreaker for me." So today in the program, we're talking about religion in the race for mayor in Utah, and more broadly, how faith plays a role in all of Utah politics and all of Utah culture. We're going to begin with former Mayor Rocky Anderson. We asked him to join us for the conversation, and we began by asking just the question that's there. Would it be a legitimate reason for a voter in Salt Lake City to vote against a candidate because of their religion?
No, you have to take everything into account. What the person has done in his or her life, who else is running against them. But you can't ignore religious affiliation in this community. Of course it's relevant. You look at the history. Utah, the territory, was a theocracy. Brigham Young said his word was the law. The heathens, they call them Gentiles, they were excluded. They didn't want them holding property. They didn't have them on juries. And there was supposed to have been an evolution, get rid of polygamy. Utah becomes a state in 1896. But that didn't stop the influence of the church. We see it all the time. Anybody that doesn't think the LDS church is involved in politics in the state is not reading the newspaper. They can't be alive because they get involved all the time. And they go to elected officials, and those officials who are members of the church, I grew up in the church, I know the number one thing you're taught as a Mormon is obedience to the leaders in the church. So it's nearly impossible for a good practicing Mormon to say no when they're approached on a political issue by somebody representing the first presidency of the LDS Church.
So there's a larger context here. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is, first of all, it's such a dominant force in the state, as you say. Also, as you sort of point out, it's been engaged in political issues like same-sex marriage, like medical marijuana. So do you think, therefore, this has given people a legitimate reason to be suspicious of a candidate who's Mormon or make certain assumptions about their position?
Absolutely. The Mormon Church, by abusing its position and the leaders in government that are members of the LDS Church, towing the line, even with regard to our absurd alcohol laws for generations, what they did with Proposition 2 and medical cannabis, that whole thing was orchestrated by former Speaker of the House, Marty Stevens, who now is working for the church. But when they engage in that kind of abuse of their power in the state, it's to be expected that this is going to be a highly relevant factor. People say, oh, Rocky, you're a religious bigot because you're pointing out that Luz Escamilla is a member of the Mormon Church. Well, we always talk about if we have too many men in elected positions, we want more women. If they're all white, we want more people of color. If they're all Mormon, which they are in this state, our governor, our lieutenant governor, our entire congressional delegation, and 9 out of 10 members of our legislature, in a city where the majority of people are not of that faith, it's hugely relevant, and we ought to talk about it.
In your original Facebook post that's getting all of this attention, you mentioned how local politics has become more corrupt. And then you wrote this. You wrote that the city is now faced with the prospect of a Mormon mayor, Luz Escamilla. Now, why mention her religion there? What does her religion have to do with her inclination for corruption, potentially?
Because when you're doing the church's bidding and not doing what's in the public interest, and you're not speaking out as a leader on issues of huge significance because they're contrary to the church's position, that's highly relevant. We've got an organization that had so much clout that even with a non-Mormon mayor, they bought a block of our main street and closed it off. Nothing could have been more divisive than that. And you know whose idea it was? A Mormon member of the city council, Stuart Reed, who became part of Dede Corradini's administration. He concocted this whole idea, went to the church, then they got Corradini to buy in, and we lost a block of our main street. That's how it works in this community. If the Unitarian Church had offered $8 million for that block, I don't think they would have gotten it.
You mentioned in the post that Luz Escamilla, and here's how you put it, seems willing to do the bidding of the church. Seems willing to do the bidding of the church as well as developers and the bank where she works. Now, in her response to that post, she mentioned that you offered no evidence whatsoever that she would do the bidding of the church. So I wanted to get you to offer evidence for that claim. How is it you can say she does the bidding for her church?
Well, she has been at the legislature a long time, a state senator, holds herself out as a leader. We've never heard anything from Luz Escamilla about the outrageous, hateful, damaging policy of the LDS Church, which they finally relented on. I guess they got another message from God. But they said that same-sex parents were automatically apostates and their children, I mean, aiming at their children, saying they couldn't be baptized until after age 18 if they left the home and repudiated their parents' relationship. If we don't have leaders in every area, and I include the media, Doug, everybody in leadership position ought to be speaking out on these issues. And what happens is the status quo continues because people like Luz Escamilla are bystanders. If they don't go along with it, they just keep their mouths shut. They're bystanders, and they go along to get along. And when Luz Escamilla keeps bragging about, well, I've passed more bills than any other Democrat, there's a reason for that. It's because she gets brought in by these Republicans to put her name on as a sponsor. She brags about, you know, I'm going to go up and get along really well with the legislature. Salt Lake's really in trouble. If we have somebody as mayor who gets along so well with the legislature, this whole notion, and I hear it from Aaron Mendenhall too, we just wanted a seat at the table. No, we ought to be throwing that table over.
one of the things you've talked about is, and you've been mentioning it today, that this has nothing to do with what a person believes in their religion and everything to do with power. Now, you seem to be saying that and making a connection between Mormon political leaders and financial corruption, that there's some sort of inherent connection there. Is that at all what you're trying to say? Are you making a direct connection between just the fact that it's a Mormon leader, that they're somehow inherently corrupt, inherently inclined to be corrupt?
Corruption to me is when people in elected positions or others in governmental positions that can impact policy are not doing what's in the public interest. That's not where they look to determine what they're going to do. They look to somebody outside of themselves, their party, their employer, people that they have lobbied for, that they want to lobby for in the future, or the church. And by the way—
And what's the church's interest in that sense? Is it financial? Is it political? Is it about power?
Depends what the issue is. Okay. On cannabis? Who in the world knows why the church was so adamantly opposed to Proposition 2?
Do you at all regret that this may have raised the disconcerting idea of voting for someone just based on religious affiliation? Do you feel any regrets about the tenor of this conversation that you seem to have started?
Well, I don't have regrets for the discussion. Of course, it's going to be relevant, not only in terms of our history, but what's going on now and the kind of schisms that we see and the kind of control that the LDS Church constantly tries to exercise.
Let me ask you this finally. You mentioned earlier in the conversation about that time when the legislature was all Mormon, how juries were all Mormon at one point in this state, when non-Mormons were denied a right to own property. But you also mentioned in the op-ed where you mentioned this point that things have changed. Don't you think that Mormonism is evolving, is changing, that those same dynamics are evolving and changing in some ways? I'm just wondering if you think that things are different.
I don't think the power dynamics have changed at all. They still tell people how to vote on certain issues. I mean, they pick and choose. They're not there all the time. But why is Marty Stevens, former Speaker of the House, the Utah Legislature, in this governmental affairs department? What's his job? His job is to influence office holders. And when we have 9 out of 10 state legislators who are members of the church, that's pretty easy for him to do. This kind of thing, it's an issue whether you're talking about it openly and honestly and publicly, or everybody's saying it behind the scenes. Here it seems like what Luz Escamilla is upset about is that her cover was blown.
Rocky Anderson served as mayor of Salt Lake City from 2000 to 2008. Joining us now on the program is Luz Escamilla, Democratic State Senator representing the 1st District. She's running for mayor, as you probably gathered, against Councilwoman Erin Mendenhall. I should mention we reached out to the Mendenhall campaign for them to join us. They declined. And Senator Escamilla, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Rocky Anderson said there at the end that you're just upset that your cover was blown. How do you just react generally to that?
I'm not sure what to say about the cover. I've never heard that before. One of my many cultural identities is obviously my faith, and I was born and raised LDS, so there's nothing to cover. It's very interesting to hear, you know, just the cover piece. I've never heard that before. I'm taken back a little bit. One, because
I think what he's saying is that, look, this is a city that is not dominated by the Mormon faith. And therefore, you didn't want word to get out that you were LDS because it may affect people's vote. And in some cases, anecdotally, it seems to be. So I think that's what
he meant.
Well,
but it's never been a cover.
You've never hidden that, I guess.
Of course. No. I mean, I go to church. I teach in Sunday school class. I was in the primary presidency in my ward for 8 years. I mean, my kids go to church with me. We have a very diverse family. So in terms of me and the cover, that's really sad. It's like saying, oh, let me cover my ethnicity or my gender. I mean, it is one of the many identities within of who I am. And so I'm not sure where that came from. I've never denied my religion or my faith. Where I worship is a very special thing for me. It's very sacred. And, you know, it's just interesting to hear that. So I've never heard that part. But, you know, I'm not sure what he means by that.
Yeah. I guess let me ask you just generally, you waited several weeks before coming out and reacting. I'm guessing you probably, you and your campaign were thinking about how are we going to respond to this? Maybe we shouldn't say anything. Why decide to speak out now? Why agree to join us?
Oh, so no, we never did. So let me start by maybe putting some context to this. I don't know Rocky Anderson. I mean, I know he's the former mayor because I've been a resident of Salt Lake City for 20-plus years.
Yeah.
I don't know the man. So, I mean, how do you respond to a very personal attack? And since this campaign, you know, that's not the only nasty thing that people say on social media. So how do you engage with someone that has so much hatred? It's very difficult. I mean, the bigotry is very real. So I'm not responding to him. But when the media asked questions, we responded. We never had a no comment on this question because it is a profile issue. If you ask me, oh, well, you know, how old are you? Oh, I'm 41. You know, what's your gender identity? I'm a female. Are you a mom? Yes. My husband and I have 6 children. I mean, those are questions. What is your religion? I'm LDS. I mean, there's nothing to hide. It's what makes someone a person. So we've never waited. In terms of putting our more, you know, like a more in-depth response, is because it took us a while to get to a point where it's like, wow, because more questions were coming.
Yeah.
But we never, I mean, were hiding or concerned. I have to say bigotry in 2019, you know, I by the way, I have a lot of faith and hope in the voters of Salt Lake City that I will not be discriminated based on my race, my religion, my national origin. I'm an immigrant to this country pursuing an American dream. So why would I think that the voters are going to do that? You know, obviously from your, you know, on not statistically significant survey that you,
yes,
you mentioned at the opening remarks, you know, it's okay. I mean, I get that perspective, but we're here. We have a great plan for Salt Lake City, a plan that talks about sustainability and inclusiveness for all. And part of that is our diversity in religion and faith.
I guess one of the questions is, I'm just thinking strategically now, which may seem crass, so just go with me on this, that one of the reasons you are, in fact, deciding to speak out is because this – maybe you've done some internal polling or you're looking at polling or there's some sense that this may, in fact, your faith may be hurting you.
No. So I haven't done an internal polling. I don't have money for that. We're knocking on doors, dog. I wish I have the ability to do internal pollings. So I'll say
But
this.
Do you worry that your faith is fed at all?
At all. And I'll tell you why.
Huh.
My record speaks for itself. And even you asked that question to Rocky. You know, and I think my record of 11 years on the issues that are progressive and my capacity as a state senator is very clear. You can go back and check on every single vote. And no one has talked about that. I mean, I'm surprised that media is not checking. Go and check on the votes on reproductive health rights issues, women's, you know, rights, you know, the right to choose and LGBTQ issues, gay marriage, medical cannabis. All of them are clear of me having an independent voice of representing my constituents. And I've done that for 11 years. That's why I've been reelected multiple times. So I'm just thinking back, well, if the voters go and do their homework and check and they said, okay, well, I've known this state senator, especially if my constituents, they know me. And maybe they just discovered where I go to worship on Sundays. But I mean, I don't think that's gonna be the what's gonna influence an entire race. Mm-hmm. I think there's very important issues in Salt Lake City that we need to take care of, and you know, I can't be apologetic of my faith, yeah. And that's what's maybe a little bit more painful in a personal from a personal point of view, is now that, you know, I have to explain to my kids why there's all these attacks on religion, you know, and having to take this as a great teaching moment about, you know, how, yeah, there's all this diversity, but sometimes things hurt and words hurt. But I'm okay. You know, our record speaks for itself. We stand, and I'm an independent voice. To think that someone with an education, with a master's degree, will be influenced just because someone just calls you and says, you have to do this. I mean, I think it's very insulting to individuals that use evidence-based, data-driven processes to make good public policy a reality. So I think it's, to me, it's not even about me. It's really about our voters and about our community. And I don't think Salt Lake City stands for that.
Do you think, it's a question I ask of Rocky Anderson, has the LDS Church put itself and you and other Mormon candidates in this position because it has spoken out about certain controversial issues in the state, like same-sex marriage, like medical cannabis? I mean, you weren't on the same side with them, interestingly. But has it given people a reason to be suspicious of a candidate who is a Latter-day Saint? Do you think you understand why someone would be?
Yes. Suspicious? The context?
Yes.
Absolutely. So what I understand is the following, that any organization, including many different religious organizations, take positions on issues that they care and that they may take stands, they do it all the time. And it's actually, you know, part of how this country is designed. Mm-hmm. I listen to all of them, Doug. I sit with all the groups. I sit related to, you know, police brutality. I sit with the Black Lives Matters, but I also sit with the police officers, and I work with both of them. I have to work with everyone. As an elected official, that's your job, to convene people and bring people together. But I understand the context of saying, hey, in a place, and I'll put, because this is where you're going to maybe appreciate a little bit of my background. I come from a country where another religion is a predominant religion. And, you know, it has played, these conversations has happened before. And that is, I come from a country in Mexico where Catholicism obviously is the most predominant religion across the country. And, you know, these interactions and these conversations happen. So, I mean, I'm not totally foreign to them, mm-hmm. in terms of just how the influence of organizations that are overly represented. I understand that.
Yeah.
But to think that one person is just that and doesn't have this intersectionality of who we are from all the different experiences, it's to me, it's not fair. It's not real. And I think people can see through that.
One of the things that has come up, Rocky Anderson has mentioned it, is he says he doesn't trust you to not keep silent about, for example, the really hurtful November policy that he referred to earlier about same-sex couples and their children. I guess the question is, would you be willing to speak against your church if something like that came up as a leader of Salt Lake City, as a mayor of Salt Lake City?
I think there is. You know, as a mayor, you have a role of speaking up on issues, not only on issues related to faith, on issues related to immigration, on issues related that are maybe international issues or national issues. Absolutely. You are the mayor of Capital City. I think for him to put all this burden on a state senator, I speak on every issue where the church has been in an opposition from my position or where I stand, all of them, that is a legislative issue. So, I mean, that's, again, as the mayor, you have a broader responsibility beyond just running the city, because you're representing the capital city of a state that is a very blue capital city, is a blue dot in the red sea that I call. Mm-hmm. And you are now, you know, have an ability to speak in broader ways. If I probably send a statement, I don't know that the media will pick it up on any of other issues. We did it in medical cannabis. When I say we, it's many of my colleagues that are Democrats from different faiths. We stood together and said this repeal and replace that's happening with Proposition 2 is wrong, and for many reasons, and these are why. So we were standing there. So I don't know why, you know, that's not being addressed as well. So, yeah, I think in the role of the mayor, there is that bigger responsibility. But on the, you know, as outside of my state Senate position, I don't know that I use that much Facebook. I mean, that context, we don't have staff. We're part of the legislature.
Speak out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me ask you this finally, because we're out of time. You mentioned in your statement, I hope we can all turn our attention back to the real issues of this campaign. Can we now? You worried that this cat is out of the bag and that so much attention is going to be paid to this issue?
It hasn't been when we're knocking on doors. And actually, people have been very supportive. They are, many of them had expressed their disappointment on some of the comments made by certain individuals. And if anything, I would say thank you, Rocky, because it had actually really put this emphasis on how in Salt Lake City we don't tolerate bigotry and we're a community that is inclusive of all.
Luz Escamilla, state senator, candidate for Salt Lake City mayor, joined us here in the studio. Senator, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break and come back in a moment. This is Radio West.
This week on Preach, the two guys who met on a Bible college puppet team and then built a Christian media empire.
Hi, kids, and welcome to VeggieTales. I'm Bob the Tomato.
And I'm Larry the Cucumber.
VeggieTales is a cartoon that used wacky singing vegetables to teach kids about the Bible. It was huge in the 90s, and then it went bankrupt. Now it's making a comeback. Listen to Preach wherever you get your podcasts or at preachpod.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the role religion may be playing in the Salt Lake mayor's race, or any race in Utah, and whether it should be playing that kind of a role. Joining us now on the program is Robert Gerke, a columnist for the Salt Lake Tribune. Robert Gerke, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Good to see you.
Dave Owen is with us, hasn't been with us in a long time, political consultant, government consultant, principal of Owen Communications, and welcome back to you.
Good morning.
We also have with us Kristen Hodson, a clinical social worker and therapist, and she's with us here in the studio. Kristen, welcome back to you.
Thanks for having me.
And Patrick Mason is joining us from Utah State University. He's an associate professor of Mormon culture and history at Utah State, joining us from the studios of public radio station KUSU in Logan. And Professor Mason, welcome to you.
Thanks, Doug.
Robert Gerke and Dave Owen, I want to begin with you because I want to talk about a couple of the political dimensions here. And Luz Escamilla is saying, you know, this is not really hurting me. In fact, it may be that this is helping me. First of all, what do you guys think about that? Is the fact that she's Mormon, as far as we can tell, hurting her?
That she's Mormon, as far as we can tell?
Is it hurting her, as far as we can tell? I think as far as we can tell, she's Mormon.
You could say, is it hurting her or is it helping her? And my answer would be yes. I think that Luz will do well, and I need to be neutral in this race. And I've talked to both candidates extensively. I have some other issues that I'm dealing with so that I'm not taking a position in the race. But if voters were as insulted by Rocky Anderson as I was, she's going to do just fine in this election. Because that was some of the most bigoted commentary I think I've ever heard. Now, that said, the comment that I had for your producer and something I've said for years and years in Salt Lake politics is that Salt Lake mayor is a protest vote. It is the place where Salt Lake voters who are frustrated by the and it's true, there is a predominant religion, and it does have an awful lot to do with the way this place is run. And so that is the one where they can really let their hair down and make obscene gestures toward the Hill and say, it was said to me years ago, you can run the schools, you can run the legislature, you can run the damn liquor laws, but you're not going to run this town. And so it can be a major factor in a mayor's race. And if you'll notice, Robert and I were talking just coming in, and I won't steal his thunder, but the composition of the council traditionally has been conservative people. And by that, I'm not making a commentary on their politics at all, because they certainly are generally Democratic, yeah, but and somewhat progressive. But as people, they're pretty conservative. That's who we elect to the council. The mayor has been more of a protest vote. It is you can almost bet who's going to win based on who is the perceived Mormon Republican. This is a very interesting race, in my opinion, because we've never had two female candidates in a major race in Utah. And the fact is that Salt Lake mayor ends up being a major race. It's at least as big as a congressional, yeah, because of the media market and so forth. Luz is, I think I lost him there. Luce's record, let me put it this way. I'd never vote for her for state senator. You know, she is completely contrary to everything I believe. But the point is, her record speaks for itself. She's right about that.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it's right that it should be a major issue in this race. I hope we've moved past that.
Robert Gerke, what do you think? Is this hurting her?
Yeah, I mean, I think Dave and I actually agree on this, so mark that on your calendar. is it hurting her or helping her? Yes, it's doing both. I think there are segments of the population where she did well in the primary, frankly, if you look at the precinct level results where there's a large LDS population. That she did very well in. And I think there is a large segment of the city that is non-Mormon and even part of the city that's anti-Mormon. I kind of agree with Rocky in the sense that there is a counterculture in Salt Lake City that counters the prevailing Mormon LDS culture and chafes at the way that the LDS church has dominated politics. And so there are some for whom I think it would be a disqualifying factor. We don't have good data. I wish we had better data because I think it's a fascinating question. But if you just look generally speaking, only about a third of the city is LDS. Whereas you're up around 60% if you go statewide. So there is a majority of the population that is not LDS. And mm-hmm. and anecdotally, I can say there are people when Rocky's statements came out who said, "I didn't know she was LDS. This is going to make me reconsider my vote." And these are people who I don't think are necessarily bigoted. But when you have two candidates who are fairly closely aligned on the issues.
Yeah.
And are both qualified.
And they need a tiebreaker.
And they need a tiebreaker.
That's suspicious of Mormon influence.
Yeah.
That's going to be, yeah.
There's one other component I just wanted to mention here is that I think the dynamic's a little bit different for an LDS woman versus an LDS man.
Agreed.
Because the church is a patriarchal church. And for an LDS woman to be part of that church, I think puts a different light on that dynamic.
Kristen Hodson, you're nodding your head. Do you want to weigh in on that point?
Yeah, I think they're right there. And I do think what Lou said in her interview, that you can hold your faith and actively speak against homophobic, sexist, racist policies. And when she says, "Look at my record," I think your relationship as a woman in a patriarchal structure can be very different. You're not really a part of the good boys club. You're highly aware of your place in that position of faith. And so I think there is something to be said about that.
Patrick Mason, I want to hear you on all of this. Just begin broadly, if you would. Is this, I guess, let me ask you this question. Is this bigotry? If you just weighed all things equally and said, the only thing that really separates these two is their faith, I'm going to vote for the non-Mormon because I'm sick of Mormons in this state.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't want to impugn anybody's motives, but if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it might be a duck. In American history, there's a long history here. This sounds a lot like the conversation around John F. Kennedy's candidacy for the presidency in 1960. And it sounds a lot like the conversation that we had around Mitt Romney's candidacy for the presidency, in which he gave a speech that actually was very Kennedy-esque. And so it's apparently we've never settled this within the broader United States and here in the state of Utah, because religious groups do continue to exercise influence in the polity. And that continues to rub up against what many people understand to be a thoroughly secular republic.
If I could just jump in, though, I think there's a key distinction, because I've heard this comparison to the Kennedy race and to the Romney race. And I've also said, well, we wouldn't be saying, you know, the Mormon mayor, if she was, say, Muslim or Jewish, that would be a totally different dynamic. And the dynamic is fundamentally different because none of those religions ever dominated politics and culture in a location the way that the LDS church does in this state. And so when you have a religion that has been setting policy on LGBT issues, on alcohol issues, on medical marijuana issues, on sex education issues in the state for so long, I think it's a completely different dynamic than you had with Kennedy. I mean, yes, there's concern that Kennedy was going to be beholden to the Pope, right? But it's not necessarily that the Pope never dictated policy in the United States the way the LDS Church dictates policy in the state of
Utah. But that was the concern, is that Kennedy, if he was in the office even though Catholics were a minority, even though, you know, the largest single Christian group, that the phone would ring and he would do what the Pope says, regardless of what the electoral politics and the electoral map says.
We're talking about a hypothetical situation versus 150 years of actual control in a state. So that, I think that's the key distinction, and I think that's the distinction the voters feel because they've lived under that rubric for so long.
I wonder, one of the things, Patrick Mason, maybe you can speak to this question, that you think that there's this misimpression that all Mormons are – like there's a monolithic idea here and that that's being that's a point that's maybe not being made in the conversation.
Yeah, I think that's one of the tropes that, that is active here, is that Mormons will always do what the church leaders tell them to do. I mean, Mayor Anderson specifically said that, that the number one thing you're taught in the church is to be obedient to leaders. And the idea here is that, that Mormons never break from that, even especially faithful church-attending Mormons. I don't know, would he say that about Harry Reid? Certainly Senator Reid took a number of positions that were distinct from what the church thought and taught. And so this is an old trope that goes back 150 years. To me, it, as a historian, I'm a little troubled by invoking the history of the 1850s. If one of my students did that to talk about contemporary issues, they'd get a C or worse on their paper. There's a lot that's changed between 1852 and 2019.
I think that makes a really good point. And one of the things I've been wondering about is what is the status within the Salt Lake electorate in terms of the Mormon issue? Let's just call it that.
Yeah.
20 years ago, it might have been different than it is today. I think about a lot of kids at the University of Utah now, and I was thinking about the football team and how it used to be that the BYU-Utah game was the be-all, end-all. It was the only thing that mattered in football, or the biggest game of the year. I'm not so sure that's so true for the University of Utah these days. And the reason is there's been a lot of dilution. What I'm looking at in Salt Lake City, number one, the Mormon population is minority. It's not even plurality. It is a distinct minority. And of those, what's interesting is about half the active Mormons also rebel against somebody who would be towing the line for the LDS faith. But Luce, I hope, and I'm again, this isn't an endorsement, and you know, both candidates have their good points, but I hope that voters will vote based on those points rather than this, because I think Luce, I've watched her for years up on the Hill, and frankly, to call her a toady or suggest that she is in some way for the LDS Church is insulting. And it really is, in my mind, bigotry.
And I think that's a really important point, because if Senator Escamilla had a record as a senator, and she has a record as a senator. If she had a record where she voted with the church against her principles or party, I think this would be a real liability for her. But I don't think that anyone can point to a vote where they said, oh, no, you know, you should have voted this way, but you didn't because the church wanted you to do that. And so I think that sort of blunts the criticism to a large extent. Beyond one other thing, though, I don't want to take us away from this, but beyond sort of the cultural dynamic of it, there's also the fact that the LDS Church is the largest landowner in the city. And so they have issues before the city on zoning and things like that, too. So it's not just a matter of these social issues that we see, but also very pragmatic, practical issues that arise day to day as mayor.
The other thing from a practical standpoint is I can tell you with certainty that every year Salt Lake City gets screwed over up on the Hill, and they are still paying for Rocky Anderson. And I've heard that sentiment expressed before by legislative leaders. And so I guess there can be this pride in saying screw you to the legislature, but there are all kinds of metaphors that come to mind. It doesn't seem very smart in the long run. But my question was, and actually, Robert, I wanted to ask both of you guys, do you think that Salt Lake is as sensitive to these issues as it was 20 years ago? Because they're really, you know, I know they're the biggest landowner and stuff, but how much influence has the LDS Church really had in terms of, for example, social policy in Salt Lake City proper?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at the anti-discrimination ordinance that the city passed first before the state passed it, the church was very much involved in those negotiations, and they came to a point where, yes, they It prohibited discrimination against LGBT residents, but it also largely exempted the LDS Church, and that's why they bought into it. I think more than that, though, it's policy that's flowed downhill from the Capitol. Right, quite literally, where they call the shots or exert their influence at the state level, and it has an impact on all of these policies and issues at the city level.
I want to shift. We're going to take a break here, and then when we come back, I want to shift to this question of the cultural, what may be a cultural divide here in Salt Lake City in particular, and manifests itself throughout the state, I think, as well, and how you navigate the arena politically and culturally, if you're Mormon or if you're non-Mormon, whether there's anti-Mormon bias or anti, you know, there's bias on the other end of that scale. This seems like one of the things that Rocky Anderson's comments and some of this seems to have raised. Kristen Hodson, I wanted to ask you about what you have noticed about if you're Mormon or if you're not Mormon. I mean, you have a particularly interesting, I think, perspective as a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see in terms of the way people manage their public lives? If they're, do you keep it to yourself if you're Mormon? How much can you reveal? Do people feel suspect of you mm-hmm. if they happen to perceive that, wait, she's a Mormon?
Well, I think therapists are particularly attuned to this in our culture, because regularly when people are trying to find a therapist, they will want to find out, are they Mormon? Are they not Mormon? And they can choose a therapist based on that factor alone, when really a good therapist, it's not going to be a factor in their therapy. I see it up at the universities that I've taught at, where that becomes very much a factor. And I've been guided to include all of your identities, make that part of the dialogue. But then I have other students that say, I do not want to reveal my identities because it's come out to harm me in the classroom. And so I think it's
so you have to keep that undercover.
I think the way in which people are managing it is very relevant, because you can have these shortcut markers that I think people are trying to assess for safety. Do you share the same values that I have? Will I be safe with you? Do we align? And that can be simply of what's in your cup. What's the length of your shorts? Like, there's these really shortcut factors. Even now, the way you identify if you're using the word Mormon or Latter-day Saint.
Yeah, that's a new identifier.
That's a new one.
Yeah.
But you really can assess that really quickly and not have to go beyond that to get to know the person or develop a relationship to further assess for safety.
Patrick Mason, what do you think about that? It seems like there are those, and I've heard this lately, who have said anti-Mormonism is the last acceptable form of prejudice, and you hear it regularly smattered throughout dinner party conversations and just private conversations. What have you noticed? I guess about that.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of Latter-day Saints feel that way. Of course, Catholics feel like anti-Catholicism is the last acceptable prejudice. Muslims feel like anti-Islamophobia is the last acceptable prejudice. I mean, so this is probably not – well, it's definitely not unique to Mormons or Latter-day Saints. But there is – look, the culture has shifted from where it was even a couple of decades ago, with a rising tide of secularization. And it's not just nationwide. It's not just on the coasts. It's throughout the country. And so the conversation around religion, the prominence, the prestige that religion once had in public life in this country has eroded significantly. And so people who are members of especially religious minorities, have to think about, how am I going to navigate this? Is my identity going to be a problem for me? Mm-hmm. Or on the other side of the coin, sometimes is it going to be a sign of privilege for me, depending on which circle I'm in at this moment?
Does the fact that the LDS Church, they don't weigh in a lot, we should say, and they profess to be politically neutral, but they do weigh in on subjects that they regard as moral issues. Same-sex marriage is clearly one. Medical marijuana was clearly one, just two that come to mind. So is it then legitimate, do you think, for people to throw that into the mix when they're making this consideration, that it's not just a neutral factor here? They are players.
Of course they're players, right? And actually, Senator Escamilla said, look, the LDS Church is a major player in this state. Let's not pretend otherwise. They have the right under our constitutional system to lobby for their interests. And so any politician should have to deal with that. And it seems to me, I'm not a resident of Salt Lake, so I don't have a dog in this fight in terms of who wins this race. But it seems to me that the city would be served well by public leaders who would work with major stakeholders in the community rather than always working against them.
Dave Owen, how do you advise political candidates about the way to use their faith or not use their faith, or don't talk about your faith, or do you talk about – I mean, what do you say? Do you have a general principle in mind?
Doug, you have some sense of how many campaigns I've been involved with, either directly or peripherally. And I'm sitting here and I can honestly say we have never discussed it.
Really?
It has never been a discussion.
Why?
Now, you could say, and I don't know what the current numbers are, years ago, probably 10, 15 years ago, the formula was 75% of Mormons, 75% of Republicans, and there's no way you could lose statewide. Mm-hmm. Whether or not that's still true, I don't really know. I haven't looked at those demographics for a long time because it's understood.
Wait, you don't ever say to a candidate.
I'm not saying it's not a factor. I'm saying we've never talked about it, and that's the honest truth.
Huh. What does that say about it? That this is just like you don't say to a.
It's assumed.
You just say, "Hey, look, you're a candidate. Maybe you should go back to church. That may help you."
No. It's just. I mean, I can't. I'm not saying it's never been a factor. I can't say that.
Yeah.
But in my life, it has not. And several times, I'm looking back on a few candidates and wondering what they were. I don't know.
Hmm.
So, I haven't practiced a lot of politics in Utah County, for example. I've helped a little bit peripherally, I've done more than I'm admitting. But there it's just kind of assumed. I mean, it's much more deeply in the culture than it is here in Salt Lake County. There might even be more conflict here in Salt Lake County over that question.
Well, is that the point, though, that it's embedded, Robert Gerke, that it's so embedded in the culture you don't have to have conversations with your political consultant there's all these codes here.
And I think it's probably particularly true in Dave's case working predominantly for Republican candidates because especially in the Republican Party, Mormonism
is presumed.
Predominant. It is predominant.
Yeah. Whereas I think this is sort of almost in some ways a uniquely Democratic problem for the Democrats, right? Because they've been doing for years this outreach to try to bring in LDS voters, and they've had a really hard time doing it and a hard time recruiting LDS
because
candidates.
Democrats will reject
because the party candidates. Yeah, the partisans in the Democratic Party, much like the voters in Salt Lake City, kind of reject LDS candidates in some instances. Now, this wasn't an issue for Ben McAdams. He's sort of maybe a unique case but he was also running against another candidate who is LDS. So, it's a challenging thing. I do think, like, if Dave and I invented a time machine and went back to 1985 when Ted Wilson was leaving office and said,
this is
the last Mormon mayor you're going to have in the next 35 years, I think people would say, well, what kind of weed are you smoking? And we're saying, well, in the future, that's legal too. Right? to think that at that time that we would elect a lesbian mayor before we elected another Mormon, that we would have two Mormon candidates and Stuart Reed and Dave Buehler, who were both the last two LDS candidates, just get destroyed by a liberal progressive Democrat, I think would be kind of shocking. And so now here we are, where I think this is kind of in some ways a test of the resiliency of that of the religious narrative.
Kristen, let me come back to you. I wonder, do you think that there's so many demographic changes going on in the city? I mean, Dave sort of raised this earlier. Things are really changing. Things are different. Do you think we're moving past this as being an issue, or are there still these sort of cultural identifiers that people are employing?
Excuse me, I don't mean to interrupt, but I'm wondering if this is a generational thing. Because so many things are in politics, LGBTQ, alphabet, all that stuff is generational. I mean, it is. They're just waiting for guys like me to die off.
Because there's a lot of people have a variety of relationships with the LDS Church. You have active, you have people that are transitioning, you have people that have left, and you have anti. And I think what you're seeing is...
Just let the record show she pointed at Robert.
Well, he made that comment. But my point is, I don't think people are wrong to have that be a part of their voting consideration. Hmm. And I do think when you have Rocky Anderson stepping in, that he's exploitation might be the wrong word, but leveraging the religious tension that is very present in the culture and making that become the issue instead of going below.
I guess my hope would be that it would not be the decisive issue for people. That if it's part of their value proposition in which they calculate their vote, so be it. But I would hope it wouldn't be decisive.
The fact that we're talking about it, I think, shows that Rocky accomplished what he was trying to accomplish. He made it an issue in the race when it wasn't really before. But we're talking about it, and I think maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah. Mm. Patrick Mason, final word. Do you want to say something finally?
Well, I think that's true. I mean, the fact is it's not going away. The LDS Church is not going away. The way that it's going to try and influence social policy and other things in the state of Utah and beyond, that's going to continue. So I actually think a society is probably healthiest when we talk about hard things rather than just sweep it under the carpet.
Patrick Mason, Associate Professor of Mormon Culture and History at Utah State University. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Kristen Hodson, clinical social worker and therapist. Thank you.
Thank you.
For coming. And Robert Gerke, good to see you. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
And Dave Owen, good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
Radio West is a production of KUER. Thanks to our intern, Natu Twe. The program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Christy Miners is our executive producer. I'm Dr. Fabrizio.